And the best way to find the context is actually to remove the chapter and verse markers, just kind of pretend that we haven't moved into another section, because we really haven't. We're continuing the thoughts of what we had just read previously at the end of chapter 9. So consider the last couple of verses of chapter 9 as we come into chapter 10 here. This is verse 16. I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heard. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. And then right into this list of Proverbs. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. But, verse 2, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. So what do we see thematically happening in chapter 10 that carries over from chapter 9? Remember what we had read in chapter 9 is that whether a man is wise or whether he is a fool, they all go to the same place. And it seems to be the effect of the world that the foolish man gains the higher recognition, where the wise man does not receive as much credit or even as much influence to take the world in a better direction. But even though that may be the case, both the fool and the wise go to the same place. The fool seems to gain an advantage over the wise. Yet, the preacher says, it is still better to be wise. Wisdom still has the gain. It still has the advantage. And as we are going to read here, consider in verse 10, for example, if the iron is blunt, now a better translation of this, I believe it's in the NASB and the Legacy Standard, it says an axe. So not an iron, but an axe. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. So what do we understand by that? Wisdom will help you in whatever you set your hand and your minds to do. Remember what we had read back in chapter 9, that whatever a man has to do, let him do it with all of his might. It is still better to do it with joy and better to pursue those things with wisdom than to exist in foolishness and to pursue those things in foolishness. Wisdom still has the advantage here. And one of the other things we're going to see in chapter 10 that would slightly differentiate it from what we read in chapter 9 is that the world is a fallen place, and we need to be ready for that. So even if a man has wisdom, there is still danger in what he sets his mind and his course to do. That's because the world has been subject to a curse. As we read in Romans 8, all things have been subjected to futility by him who subjected it because of the sin of mankind. When things go bad, that should not be a surprise to us, because we have seen the condition, the corruptness that the world has been subjected to. But we gain an advantage having to deal with those things when we deal with those things in wisdom. That's the lesson here in chapter 10. Wisdom still has the advantage. So let's consider each one of these proverbs as we go through them and see that theme, understanding that wisdom still has the advantage. Ecclesiastes 10:1. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Now, when we talk about dead flies, we're not talking about like flies that are dead in the ointment. It's actually talking about carrion flies. So you're talking about those flies that you would find swarming around a carcass. They carry the stink of the carcass that they were just feeding from, or the manure, wherever they happen to be. And if they come over to the ointment, remember, we've seen in Ecclesiastes is like perfume. It's a sweet-smelling fragrance, and it's often attached to a man's character. So just like you smell a pleasing aroma, and it just captivates the senses. If a person who's wearing a fine fragrance walks into a room, you know he's come into the room. And when he walks out, you can still smell his presence, right? And so it is with a fine ointment. It is attached to a person's character. But when dead flies come to that ointment, they make the ointment give off a stench. Even though it smelled great before, a little bit of those flies can make it really quite terrible. And you wouldn't want to put it on yourself because you know where those flies have been. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Can you think of a time when you greatly admired a person and had perhaps been following this person for years. And then you come to find there was some sin in their life that was made public. And suddenly your perception of them was shattered. And it didn't matter the years of admiration that you had behind that person. This one sin is exposed, and suddenly the character of that person just completely changes in your mind. And so it is with the man who seems to live his life in wisdom and honor, but he entertains a little bit of foolishness. And he probably had a very human moment where he thought, I can do this a little, right? Just chase after the passion of my flesh a little bit. I won't go all in, but I'll just entertain my fancy a little. And then find himself in way bigger a mess than he thought he was getting into. Maybe you could say the very same thing has happened to you as well. And so this is, again, the lesson as we're drawing this from chapter 10, understanding that wisdom has the advantage. It's better for you to stay on the wise path. Don't think that even with a little bit of foolishness, at least I have a whole lot of wisdom to compensate, right? No, a little bit of wisdom makes you look like an idiot. It doesn't make you look like a person who has actually been investing their lives in pursuing wisdom and honor. Wisdom is still the better way to go. Verse 2, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. I have used this verse before in that punny fashion that made Josh chuckle a little bit ago. And I've said, listen, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but let me just quote to you Ecclesiastes 10:2. A wise man's heart inclines to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. You get it, right? Okay. Now, is that what this verse is about? No, that's not what this verse is about. It's fun, it's punny, but that's not what it's about. As we have seen throughout the Old Testament, the right hand is a hand of strength. Now, I've never really put a lot of study into that. I would assume that the reason why that's the case is because most people are right-handed. And since the right hand tends to be your dominant hand, then that's the reason why the right hand is characterized in the Old Testament as the hand of strength. I don't know if that's the reason or not, but that would just be my assumption. So just like you have it said, the Lord will uphold you with his mighty right hand, or it's said about Christ being seated at the right hand of God. So we have the right hand as a demonstration of strength, and the left hand tends to be a demonstration of weakness. And so the fool will go toward the left. He will go to the weak path. He will look for the easy way. Whereas the wise man is inclined to the right, to do the wise thing, to gain the advantage, to be strong and upheld. And so verse 3 goes right along with that. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense. And he says to everyone that he is a fool. So even if you see a fool going the right way that he should go, yet he still seems to do it in the most foolish way possible. And kind of demonstrates to everybody else that he is not as wise a man as he thinks. Sometimes the fool doing the right thing occasionally can tend to fool a lot of people, and they follow after him and find out they've been following an idiot. So even when he walks on the road, he lacks sense. Verse 4, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not fly off the handle. Have you ever been in court before and you've seen somebody try to argue with a judge? Do you think that goes well for him, Chris?
Depends on the judge.
It depends on the judge. Rather, if you keep calm, you can probably bring the tension down a little bit, and maybe things will go better for you. I've been in this position before where I've worked for people, where the men that I've worked for would tend to take the smallest thing and turn it into this giant drama. And everybody else has to be as worked up and as intense about this drama as he is. And I had just learned in that situation, in that circumstance, that if I'm the one that kind of pulls back a little bit and maintains a calmness and a civility, that it can tend to bring the temperature down a little bit. And people don't get as worked up, and it doesn't turn into as big a deal as sometimes the more dramatic people want to make it. So that's a rightly applied proverb for any of us. It is better for us to keep our heads, excuse me, Don't lose your temper. Don't panic. We kind of talked about that a little bit this morning. As the world is kind of going a direction right now in an election season where everybody's panicking over who is going to win this November. It doesn't matter whether you're on the right or on the left. There are people on both sides that are just like, the world's going to fall apart if my candidate doesn't win. Well, we can demonstrate trust in the sovereignty of God when we don't lose our minds like everybody else around us is losing. Again, wisdom still has the advantage. Now, verses 5 through 7 are kind of set apart from the rest of what we have in the chapter. As it says here, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I have seen slaves on horses and princes walking around like slaves. Now, this comes back to what I had kind of led into chapter 10 with, in that oftentimes we'll see the foolishness will gain the advantage. The men with the most wealth and the most influence seem to be the idiots that are on top of things. Whereas the wise men who could better guide the world in a direction that would be just better for everybody, they tend to have the low place. The rich sit in a low place. I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. Where are the men that could rise up and lead us? Instead, they're in these places that have very little influence. And this is, once again, kind of a dose of reality, recognizing that the world is fallen. It isn't the men of honor that tend to gain the advantage over a situation. It tends to be the fools that get elevated in our most dire of situations. But nonetheless, that shouldn't make us decide, well, I'm just not going to choose the wise course anymore because it never seems to have an advantage over anybody else. We still need to go the way of wisdom. And going the way of wisdom, if for anything, because the Lord has commanded it. Because it is pleasing to God. Even if most people aren't listening to it, we desire to go the way of the Lord, though we may stand apart from anyone else. Now, you'll see throughout chapter 10, and you probably noticed this already, that there is a common theme of the rulers are like this, but the common man is like that. And you'll see this constant tension of the relationship between these places of honor and the places of humility. So as we go on into verses 8 through 11, this kind of puts some proverbs into some real-world situations that kind of demonstrate, once again, that the world is a fallen place, and we may put ourselves in danger in the work that we attempt to do, but it's still better to take the wise course than the foolish course. Consider verse 8. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. Now, the first part of that, he who digs a pit, that might make sense. If I dig a pit either as a trap or as a moat or something like that, I mean, I've just increased my chances that I could fall into it as well. The second part of that is a little more odd. A serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. Why are there serpents in the wall? Well, this is better understood as a giant hedge. Most walls were not stone and brick walls. They were big hedges. Have you ever heard the expression, Lord, put a hedge of protection around that person? Have you ever heard that? So it's to create a natural boundary line. A person might grow a hedge around their property, which is easier to care for and establish than doing it with cut stones and bricks. And so a hedge would be dense, and if you try to cut through it, well, there might be snakes nesting in there. There could be some sort of pest or creature in there that would harm you if you try to break through that wall. Maybe it's necessary to break through the wall. Maybe you have to cut the hedge down or for whatever reason. But you increase the chances of something biting you ultimately because you've decided to do that. You break through a wall, you could get hurt. Verse 9, he who quarries stone is hurt by them. Again, we probably have to quarry stone. It's good to take stone and brick and shape it so that you can build something out of it. But you still might hurt yourself in doing that. He who splits logs is endangered by them. I knew a man who was splitting logs, got a splinter in his eye, ended up losing his eye cutting logs. But it's still something you got to do. It's still work that needs to be done. Verse 10, which I had illustrated to you earlier, if the axe is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, But wisdom helps one to succeed. It's still better to have the sharp edge. Verse 11, if the serpent bites before it is charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. It's still better for the charmer to charm the snake than to just try to pick it up uncharmed. It's still stupid to do either way, but it's better if the snake has been charmed. Verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. And here we're going to have some contrast between the wise and the fool. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him. You listen to most politicians, and a fool multiplies words. I remember years ago, Jay-Z, the rapper, came out with the Black Album. It was kind of like R&B's response to the Beatles having the White Album. So Jay-Z had the Black Album. I read a review of that album in a Christian magazine. It might have been World, but I don't remember for sure. And I just remember the reviewer of the album quoting this verse in the review of that particular project. He said, "A fool multiplies words." And that's what these hip-hop albums tend to be. Fools multiplying words. There's a lot of that going on in popular music. A lot of that going on in movies and the TV shows that we might use or watch to entertain ourselves. It's a lot of fools multiplying words, and we might be want to listen to them. But no man knows what is to be, and no one can tell him what will be after him. That's a statement that has come previously in Ecclesiastes. And the king had used that statement to bring humility into the heart, to recognize God is the one who has set this course. He is the one who is in control of all of this. The fool decides that he knows the way that he should go, and he multiplies words trying to convince other people to go the way that he is going. And many people will probably be charmed, just like is said before about the snake charmer. Some people might be charmed by that fool's words and go the way that he goes. But we need to trust the Lord. We need to continue to recognize that we don't know what will be, but God does, because he has established the course. And this is just a proverb that had been added here, a kind of a line to this proverb, to remind the hearer of what has been said before, so that we will come back into submission to God, knowing he is the one who has set the course. Verse 15, the toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Again, he's just following his own path and doesn't know the way that he is to go in order to gain shelter. Last of all, we have these final phrases in verses 16 to 20. These warnings, and yet also a promise of advantage that you gain trusting in the Lord. Verse 16, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. I remember Isaiah 3:12, where the Lord laments over Israel. O my people, women rule over them, and children have advantage over them. So because women and children are ruling in a land, that makes a land weaker. And you see right now that there is a woman who is a heartbeat away from the highest office in the land. That does not strengthen our country. It doesn't matter whether that woman who is running for that office is a conservative or a liberal. It actually weakens our country to be subject to women as rulers, especially when a woman holds an office that is what? What do we call the office of the president? They are the commander in chief. So now we have a woman leading armies, which God has not given women to do. God has given it to men to be the providers and the protectors, even when it comes to filling the highest offices in the land. And so here there is a mourning over the land when the king is a child, when it's somebody who is a fool, when it's somebody who has no experience and no wisdom to guide a nation. But verse 17, happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobility, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Verse 18, through sloth, the roof sinks in. Because the lazy man, not repairing his roof, not taking care of those things that he is entrusted to take care of. And instead, they deteriorate and fall apart. So the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. But verse 19, bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Now, that's a curious statement to find in the Bible, especially when we've been warned in places like 1 Timothy 6:10 that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. And you may have said to your children, money is not the answer to everything. I hope your kids don't find Ecclesiastes 10:19 if you've ever said that to your kids. Well, mom and dad, I found it in the Bible right here that money answers everything. Well, this is just to reflect blessing that comes upon a land. That's what it's talking about. If a land has been doing what they have been supposed to do, working hard, seeking wisdom, instead of going the foolish way, having rulers that fear God, having rulers that are the sons of nobility, as talked about in verse 17, then what will the land gain from that? The land will be wealthy rather than poor. It won't languish. It won't fall into disrepute and devastation. It will gain wealth because wealth will be the evidence of hard work and wise decisions made for a particular land. Remember, this is in the context of land that we're talking about here. And we see multiple proverbs even in the book of Proverbs about how the man who works hard will eat his bread, but the man who doesn't do any labor doesn't have anything. And so, same sort of thing that's being said here. Bread made for laughter, wine gladdens life. So work for those things and be pleased with them when you gain them. There is nothing wrong with that. Verse 20, even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich. For a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature will tell of the matter. Don't gossip. Don't let your lips be loose and mutter about things you really don't have any control over anyway. There is a certain time and a place that we have to speak up about certain matters, and there's a time and a place where it would probably be better for us to keep our mouths shut. For remember, if you go back up to the top, at the beginning of chapter 10, where it says in verse 4, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offenses to rest. And it's that same sort of idea, that same sort of mindset that carries over into verse 20 as well. Don't be speaking of such things for which you're probably going to get in trouble. It's better for you to keep your tongue. It's better for you to set your course in the way of those things that are honorable and right and wise, then to join in the chorus of fools and everybody be complaining about who's ruling and their circumstances and how this guy's an idiot and not doing what it is that he should. There will probably be some recourse for that, if that is the way that you lack self-control regarding your tongue. But we need to set our minds and our ways entirely on the Lord and depend upon His strength to carry us through. Again, wisdom has the advantage. Even though we will see, though we set our minds and hands to do things, there might be a danger there. Things may not go the way that we want them to. Foolish kings end up ruling, and those who are wise end up having the lower places. But wisdom still has the advantage. It is still better to pursue wisdom. And when we talk about wisdom, it is not merely the wisdom of the world, but it is the wisdom of God. Remember what we read in Proverbs 1:7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. Isaiah saying in Isaiah chapter 8, do not call conspiracy all that this people calls conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear, nor be in dread. But the Lord your God, Him you shall fear. Let Him be your fear and your dread. We trust the Lord in all things. We look to Him for His wisdom and guidance. We trust in Him knowing He is the one who has set the course, who has raised up a king or torn down a king, who has put this country in the place that it's in. If it be for judgment, then that is God's way and it is right and good. If it be for revival, then that is God's way and it is right and it is good. But either way, we trust in the Lord, in His hand to safely guide. And for those who have believed in the Lord Jesus Christ, we have nothing to fear of whatever judgment may come upon a land because of its wickedness and its depravity. We will be saved and we will be delivered out of it by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, who sits enthroned on high above all. Let's finish with prayer.